Welcome to CMDA's Voice of Advocacy podcast. Here's your host, Dr. Brick Lance.
Throughout the world, the Christian church is the most diverse group of people and at the same time, the most unified group of people. Those of us in healthcare have the privilege of traveling the world with our profession, and we're able to worship with other believers wherever God calls us. So today, I am with my three best friends in the Balkans, that is Eastern Europe, and they care for the vulnerable with their pregnancy centers. So welcome to the Voice of Advocacy podcast. Vesna from Novi Sad.
Hello to everyone.
Mila from Belgrade.
Hello.
And Svetlana from Skopje. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. So we're going to ask you a few questions about your care for the unborn and care for the moms here in the Balkans. So if one of you each want to give an answer to this, when and why did you develop a heart for the unborn? Vesna, you want to go first?
Sure, Dr. Brick. It was a long time ago. It was in 2003. I was at that moment involved in the ministry of planting a church in the city in Western Serbia, in Sombor, with my husband. And this is the first time that I heard from a Canadian friend about pregnancy care centers. She sent me an email that she started working in something that she called a pregnancy care center. And I asked her, what is that? And then that's how it started. You know, I asked so many questions. She was patient to answer all my questions. It was for me, I have never heard anything like that in our churches at that time. We never addressed the topic of abortion in our politics. There was, you know, in political public sphere, there was never talk about abortion. Churches were silent about sanctity of human life issue. So many conferences I have attended, trainings, but it was all about discipleship, church planting, how to share the gospel, all important, but never about the sanctity of human life. So when I heard that, it was for me something new and overwhelming. I checked the data in my country about the number of abortion. That also was a hard moment for me. And actually, she invited me to come to the States to the Heartbeat International Conference. And that was this kind of turning point for my life. As part of international groups, 40 of us were internationals. And we visited, for me, it was the first visit to a local pregnancy care center in Omaha, Nebraska, that changed so much in my life. For example, my husband lost his church planting partner. but yeah, that's how everything started. It became a burden. That was all I could think about day and night. I had a child at that moment in diapers, and it was so obvious, you know, just this idea of the value of human life.
Well, God has taken you on a journey, hasn't he?
Yes, indeed.
It's been an amazing journey. Mila, what about you in Belgrade?
Yeah, this is an interesting story as well. So my first contact with pro-life, I would say, was a burden from God that I always wanted to have a lot of children and I always wanted to have siblings, but I'm an only child. And actually, as I got married, I also lost two babies. So I have a personal motive, but actually what inspired me was at the conference, Daughters of the King, when I was able to hear Vesna's teaching for the first time. And so this is really a great thing, but it doesn't have really nothing to do with me, anything to do with me. So by the end of her teaching, I saw that a lot of women came out to altar call to repent because of the abortion. And these were the women from all parts of ex-Yugoslavia. And there, I think there were really a lot of women. and I could feel their pain, but still I thought that this had nothing to do with me. And at that time I didn't know that West and her team were praying for somebody to start a center in Belgrade, because Belgrade is the capital of Serbia with 2 million people and with no pregnancy center at all. But after a couple of months, I was watching God TV and I saw a young pastor who was preaching in front of an abortion clinic in Texas, and he was giving his testimony that he was conceived in rape. So this touched my heart so much, because this was one of the questions that I was asking myself. And this is the thing that is always the question, you know, for women who were raped, what to do with a child who was conceived in rape. Should they abort them or should they keep them? So this pastor was for me a testimony that one life which was saved could actually change the world. And I was thinking, what about all these babies that were aborted? And probably some of them could be pastors, some of them can have some other callings. And I thought how many babies were killed and how this world would look like if we would have all these babies that were conceived. So I cried all night, and I knew that God put also a burden on my heart to do something about it. And then I started to visit different centers, Vesna Center and other centers in the region.
Wow, what a story. God can do amazing miracles, can't he? So I started traveling with Medical Education International almost 15 years ago, and with Dr. Andy Sanders, who many of you know, told me about a pregnancy center in Skopje, Macedonia, which was my first visit. And I said, I have to meet the lady that is running the center. Svetlana, how did you become so compassionate about the unborn?
Well, someone asked me to start a pregnancy center, and at that point, I was looking for a job. I'm a certified French teacher, so I graduated French language and literature, and I thought I will stay in education my entire life. And the school where I was working had to close, and I was looking for a job. And for a year and a half, I was applying to so many positions, to so many different companies, and one closed door after another. And I said, God, you must be having something very special for me, since you are still providing but not allowing me to have any job. And then I met someone who asked me, would I like to start a pregnancy center? And I said, yes, because I needed a job. And then I asked, so what is a pregnancy center? I had no idea. I'm single, I've never been married, never had an abortion, never been pregnant in my life. So I was like, what is that? And after I said yes, God started showing me things from my past. I got pregnancy scared once. So I know the worst 3 minutes in my life, waiting for the test to be negative and praying to be negative. So I can understand that fear of unexpected, unplanned pregnancy. But also different situations from my childhood, growing up with an abusive father, fighting for my life, fighting for the life of my mother, fighting for the life of my brother. I guess I was born a fighter. And when I said yes and I started organizing everything to start a pregnancy center, a group of friends from the States made for me possible to go in the States for a training. So I spent a whole month in a pregnancy center in the States, in Chicago area, where I basically shadowed from the receptionist to the executive director, learning every single position. And I was so excited to go back home and start with Lydia, a beating heart, and reality hit. There's nothing similar of a pregnancy center in the United States with a pregnancy center here on the Balkans.
Kind of which brings me to my next question. And of course, the Christian church is different here in the Balkans than is the United States. So do you get support from churches either in your community, in your nation, or from overseas? How does that work with churches and your relationship with them?
Well, this is an interesting question, because when I started ministry in Belgrade, the only ministry which was pro-life was actually one existing pro-life center in Novi Sad. And if you would say, in a contact with pastors and people from the church, yeah, I would like to share something about pro-life, they actually wouldn't know what really pro-life is. Or they would say, oh, this is something to do with helping with diapers or baby clothes, or this is something that Vesna is working on, you know, and people couldn't connect pro-life really, not really with real issues and crisis issues that women and their husbands are going through, or partners, or even they couldn't imagine the situation in which ladies are finding themselves in a crisis pregnancy. And first of all, there was a lack of education in churches. And secondly, after years, I actually realized that many pastors themselves, but also church members, had actually abortion, and it is not spoken about it. I was speaking at one conference with 2,000 ladies, and I asked who didn't have abortion, and just only one lady said that she didn't. But also the pastor, for example, told me that look at this family photo of ours, and you can see that one child is missing. And he shared also that he was scared because his wife was diagnosed with some medical issues, so he was afraid that he will lose a wife and a child, so they decided to have an abortion. So there are a lot of stories like that, but first of all, it is important that we didn't have, from a local churches, we didn't have any support except of diapers and baby clothes, but we had really understanding and the support from the church community in States. We didn't have a lot of contacts. We still have just one church that is helping us, and we have individuals as you or some pregnancy center that they're helping us. But generally, we don't have huge support from churches here. But the main thing is the understanding of the importance of sanctity of human life in the churches. That is the most that we are lacking here.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for that answer. And it is a privilege for Dove Medical in Eugene, Oregon to support all of you three. It's a pure joy of me. We give a certain percentage of our donations overseas. And so I love working with you ladies. So in the United States, even though many OB-GYN physicians, obstetric gynecologists, will go through some training for performing abortions, but only a very small minority actually in the practice will perform abortions. What is that like over here in the Balkans as far as OB-GYN doctors performing abortions? Is it a high percentage? What do you think?
I think in Macedonia, almost every single one performed or have performed in the past. Most of them have private clinics. So in Macedonia, you know, abortions can be performed only in a hospital, setting where they will have anesthesiologists, nurses, OBGYN. But we've heard stories that even in the private practice, a small private clinics, they would perform an abortion. Unfortunately, OBGYNs in Macedonia think that they are doing it a favor to the woman when they will perform an abortion. They think they are saving her from future troubles, or if the baby is with Down syndrome, they are saving her from shame from the society. So I think that almost every single one is performing an abortion. We are still looking for one pro-life OBGYN in Macedonia. And recently I've heard about someone who said, I'm gonna stop doing it. So I'm hoping that this person will be the first one who will rise up and say, no more, I refuse to do it, and you can do that too. It's also like they don't get any financial compensation for that. So it's part of their job. You know, it's like in the States, you know, they can get some financial compensation for, like, if they perform 5, 10, 100 abortions in a month. In Macedonia, it's like part of their job, and, you know, they can do it either one or none or 50 in a month. Still, they will get the same salary.
Okay.
So I honestly cannot see what would be the motivation for them to perform or to say, no, I won't perform anymore.
So it's really ingrained in your culture, it seems like.
It is.
So Vesna, you took me to the University Hospital in Novi Sad one time, and we met with an obstetrician gynecologist who was Catholic, and he is pro-life. But he said he was the only one that didn't do abortions in your community. Is that accurate?
Correct, Dr. Brick. And I will use this opportunity to really thank you for coming from year to year to our part of the world to teach medical community about pro-life, about other values so important in the medical field. And you, when we met, that was actually the first time we met, you immediately, you know, wanted to meet someone who is pro-life in the medical community, and that was the only doctor that I knew at that point. Apart from him, I only know one lady who is not a believer, but she's against abortion and is not performing abortion and is a gynecologist. But this doctor, you know, I'm very sad. He was the director of the very large maternity hospital in Novi Sad for the whole north area of Serbia. And in our maternity hospitals, one wing, we have children being born, and the wing on the left is for abortions. So he was ahead of the whole clinic. But, you know, he is not speaking publicly that he's pro-life. When we, you and I, visited him in his office, he said that greatest accomplishment of his life is that he can fill 3 classrooms of children that he saved from abortion because he counseled mothers in his private clinic not to perform abortion. He encouraged them to have children. But I haven't seen him publicly speaking his values. He even, as a head of the clinic, he even was speaking that this clinic from now on can do chemical abortions because this medicine is finally legal in Serbia or things like that. He has to do that as part of his job, you know, to give this information. But we just know, two of us, we visited him in his office and we know that he's against abortion and that he's pro-life, but who else knows about that?
So correct me if I'm wrong on the statistics. And when people ask me when I come over here to visit what the abortion rate is over here. So in the United States, what I quote is basically about one abortion for every 4 or 5 live births. That ratio is almost flipped here. There's many more abortions than live births throughout the Balkans. Is that true?
Yes. So we have official statistics and unofficial statistics. Official statistics come only from the state hospitals, who are obligated to give the numbers to the government. And then you have several private hospitals in Macedonia that are not obligated to give numbers. And usually we take the number from, you know, the state hospitals and usually multiply it by 5 or 6 or even 10. So according to some statistics in Macedonia, like right here, I have some of the numbers. Let's say in 2019, there are only 3,784 registered abortion, which is not true. That number, it's most likely at least 7 to 8 times more than this one. And we have, comparing to this, a little bit less than 20,000 live births in Macedonia. And then we have over 20,000 deaths from various reasons, natural death, accidental death, murders, and, you know, etc.
So there's more abortions than deaths per year.
Yes.
In Macedonia.
Yes. I mean, we keep losing people through immigrations. People are moving out of Macedonia. We are losing people by, you know, by death. And also we are losing people by
losing
abortion.
Losing the babies. Yep.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. So give me a number, each three of you. What patient, what woman have you taken care of that has the most number of abortions? How many abortions has that woman had in her life?
22.
Oh, my goodness.
11.
Wow. Mila?
This was not our patient, but the most abortions that I heard of is 40.
40 abortions.
40 abortions. I don't know how this is possible, but it's still, because within a year, they can have even 3 abortions if they're, you know, giving a birth to a child.
This is a tragedy in your countries. It's absolute tragedy.
When I started working, I apologize for just interrupting you, but when I started working in this area, it was 2003-04, the most number of abortions were in marriage. Up to 85% of abortion were performed in marriage.
So it's just a form of birth control for marriage.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that was the most shocking thing for me. When I was in the States, most of the clients that I observed were single mothers, teenagers, or single young adults. And I thought that would be the case in Macedonia, that that would be the type of clients that we will have. I mean, yes, our first client was a single lady who later became single mother. but 90% of our clients are already married with children. And I think that was the most shocking thing for me, like how a mother can decide to have an abortion. I mean, in my mind, it was very hard to accept that concept. Like, you already know that this is a child because you have a child at home, and still you decide to have an abortion. But they are seeing it as a birth control because it goes from generation to generation. My grandmother had it, my mother had it, so why shouldn't I have an abortion? My mom said, oh, it's not a big deal. I had several abortions. It's like, you know, go wash your hands. It's, you know, we even use, in our cultures, we use the term cleaning, like I'm gonna cleanse myself.
Wow.
Like I'm gonna I'm dirty and I'm gonna go and just wash myself from this.
Let me ask this. So this is, seems to be such a tragedy in your countries. I mean, you're losing your population through this too, and it's got to be damaging moms, damaging marriages, damaging men for that matter. But is there opportunity, because I know you each have a small staff at your centers, do you get a chance to share the gospel?
Yes. And I would even say, like, when I was starting with Lydia, some of the pastors saw me as a threat. They thought I'm going to go and start a church in that city. It's like, I'm not called to be a pastor. I'm called to be a leader. And that's what I am. And that's what I will be. But Lydia will be a bridge between a woman and your church. And that's actually what happened. Now we have several families, not just women. We have several families who attend a church. Their entire family goes to a church because of Lydia. Because at one point we had an opportunity to share the gospel. We serve them first, and then we share the gospel with them. Because we would like to establish the personal relationship. We would like them to trust us that no matter of the decision that they will make, we will be there for them. And after that personal trust is gained and the relationship is established, then we share the gospel with them. You know, when they come to the center, I don't just say like, okay, this is what the Bible says, boom, with several verses. You know, they will run away, definitely. But after they know that we are here to love them, to serve them, to support them, no matter what, then they are open to hear the gospel. Before that, nothing that you're going to say to them will touch their hearts.
Hmm. So I don't know if you have the numbers for this. So in the United States, particularly the last few years, we're on this curve within the graph of the increase of chemical abortion, mifepristone, followed with misoprostol. They're estimating now that that's getting close to 70% of all abortions. Certainly has a higher risk than surgical abortions. Is chemical abortion available in your communities, in your countries? So they're all shaking their heads. Yes, it's available. Do we have any idea on the numbers?
Well, I have the statistics from Macedonia. This statistic actually is from the Department of Health, and it's the number of abortions performed in the state hospital in Skopje. So these are official statistics that we have. For the chemical abortion, and for in 2023, chemical abortions were performed 737 times. 11 of them were minors. The youngest was 15 years old.
Wow.
And then, and this is still the 12th gestational week. Between 12th and the 22nd gestational week, we have 199 chemical abortions. So you're a doctor, Dr. Brick. Tell me, how's that possible?
That's just unsafe as well. It's unsafe for the mom when you get that age in gestation. That's incredible. So let me ask you about, I know you're trying to save the babies, you're trying to present the gospel. How else do you care for the moms in your centers?
Well, we have different ways how we help women. First, we inform them, we educate them, and we are here to care for them, giving counseling. And also, what we really do is helping women who are, need to be healed because of a pain of abortion trauma or miscarriage trauma. So we help them to different programs, which are based, and what we really do is to help them to go through the whole process. So we cared for them for a longer period, not just a couple of weeks, but we followed them for many years. So if they get pregnant again, we help them again. So in the first couple of weeks, we help them through counseling, and then we help them practically as much as is possible.
Now, Vesna, I have, again, visited a vision of yours in Novi Sad. Tell us about the vision, where that is right now.
Well, 10 years ago, we have added a service of providing accommodation to moms, pregnant women and moms with small babies. So in these 10 years, 24 families have lived in our nest. We call it the nest. We have had a lot of challenges because we are renting homes for moms. So we made a brave, I would say courageous, step to dream big and to envision a house that we will own. So we really decided to buy a piece of land and to start building a maternity home where we can help more families every year. And that is also the way how we care for women, because even if Mila has a client in Belgrade that needs accommodation, we can help with that. We have had women who are thinking about abortion just because they don't have a place to stay. So just recent story is that mom, she came pregnant to our pregnancy care center and with a five-year-old son, and she was still in, you know, time of making decision what to do. Actually, what has helped her to make a decision for life was that we offered that she can stay up until, you know, the next 2 years, actually, because she was early in the pregnancy in our nest. So she's taken care of that there, and we then care for them. We start with really listening well. I don't know, we forget how listening is important. And through all this time that they are in our home, we really see them. And as Mila said, they have so many trauma in life that they need to deal with. And if they need to finish school, we want to help them finish school. If I knock at the doors of, right, education of adults so that she would finish sixth grade, you know, and I'm questioning her geography in the maternity home as she's holding her baby. You know, you can imagine that. And also we want to help them if they need some maybe vocational education so that they would be able to take care of themselves and their child when they exit our home. But this vision of a home is still, we are still going into that direction. This week, we will be putting the roof over our maternity home and windows. And like it will be closed, right? And then internal work.
Fesna, this is very bold because I can just tell you finances are difficult to come by over here in the Balkans compared to the United States. So we will continue to be praying for you, and we're going to talk a little bit more about finances in a second. So just a brief answer, if you have an answer, I want to know from each three of you the greatest joy and the greatest trial or disappointment you've had in your ministry.
I will start with joys. I don't think I want to share about disappointments. Yeah, but like for everyone, you know, who works in a pregnancy care center, it is really, what a joy when someone chooses life. I mean, we have to share that as number one. When you have a client and the abortion is already scheduled, you know, and then, you know, you see this child growing, you know, and this child suddenly is 5 years old and 7 years old, and you track their lives on Facebook. It's just, I can just be, you know, overwhelmed with joy at this situation. Recently, we had one client that I exchanged 32 emails. So it was just an email from central part of Serbia where we don't have a center. So after so many emails, you know, she decided to continue pregnancy. And I'm now, next step is to visit her, really to travel there 3 hours away and to bring baby presents. And so that's the greatest joy. And then the what also brings me so much joy is connection with other pro-lifers in my surrounding.
There's a bond in that.
I love Svetlana. I love Mila. I love Anita. I mean, in our area, we were all pioneers, and it was such a lonely experience to start anything. We need each other so badly that getting together brings so much joy. And because I can't even explain that, you know, yes, we are Christians and we have Christian community, but what we have among each other, because we know what we are going through. And this is a battle that not everyone understands, this battle for life and how many attacks we have on our everyday life and in work. So we need each other, and it is joy to follow each other's success, if I can use this word. And their joy is my joy. Their success is my success. It's just unbelievable.
Hmm. Anything to add for you two?
Yes, so the biggest joy, of course, are the kids that they are born. And the thing is, for me personally, is to develop a system of support where there was nothing. I mean, there was a Vesna in Novi Sad, of course, but the rest of Serbia is huge, and there's 7 million people with two pregnancy centers. And the greatest joy are the kids, but also the moms. And some of the moms got saved, the family got saved, the ladies who had an abortion, they got to receive healing and restoration, and the whole atmosphere in their homes changed completely. So my biggest disappointment, I must say, was that I really didn't have support from the churches in Serbia, but God heard my cry, and he actually made my vision brighter, because I understood that it is now the time to start a new church. So for us, as a family and other couple who is also involved in the ministry, is really a great joy that we can share completely openly about pro-life, about the sanctity of human life. And the first time we share about that in our church, many ladies hear that, and they got saved and got baptized. And this is completely changing the atmosphere from culture of death to culture of life. So this is the biggest disappointment became my biggest joy.
That's fascinating. So I have a question just for Vesna and Mila. All right. So I know.
Wow, what a discrimination.
It is a discrimination on this. Here's my question. So Heartbeat International, they give an annual award to an individual every year.
Okay, I take the statement back.
Who represents Christ in this area of the unborn and broken families. And Svetlana won this award last year. What do you two think about that?
It's an amazing thing. Yeah, this was this year, not the last
year. This year, yeah,
month. This is amazing. This is really amazing, and we are sharing the joy with Svetlana, and we are very grateful that she's now connecting us through this network. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Vesna, what do you think?
Same, congratulations. And as I said, her joy is my joy. You know, we are so proud of her, and she deserved that reward.
So it reminds me, so on Paul's missionary journey, he went to Macedonia, correct? And he ran into a lady named Lydia, of course, which is what your center is named after. So let me just read the scripture from the book of Acts. A woman named Lydia, a dealer in purple cloth from the city of Thyatira, who worshiped God, was listening. The Lord opened her heart to pay attention to what was spoken by Paul. And after she and her household were baptized, talking about the baptisms, I love that, Mila. So after she and her household were baptized, she urged us, "If you consider me a believer in the Lord, come and stay at my house." And she persuaded us. So that was Paul meeting Lydia. So thank you for your ministry. I'm going to read a couple of other scriptures, and this is kind of geared towards our listeners. Again, we are one body in Christ. And you certainly need our prayer. And if anybody's so inclined, I want you to reach out to me at cmda.org/advocacy or advocacy@cmda.org. And if you want to participate in ministry with these ladies, please reach out to me. So in Galatians 6:10, it states, "Therefore, as we have the opportunity, we must work for the good of all, especially for those who belong to the household of faith," which are these three dear friends of mine as well. And then from 1 Timothy 5:8, "But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." So I would encourage you to join me in supporting these ladies who represent Christ in their countries in a very, sorry to use this term, ladies, but in a very dark world. The church is a very small minority of your population, which creates a lot of tragedy in itself. But you are sharing Christ and doing very practical help for those people in the need, what we consider the vulnerable. So I want to thank each of you very, very much for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Brick.
Thanks for listening to CMDA's Voice of Advocacy podcast. If you would like to suggest a future guest or share a comment with us, please email us at advocacy@cmda.org. And if you like the podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share it on your favorite social media platform. This podcast has been a production of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.